हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवत्सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Okay, so now we're hearing Bhishmadeva is telling the story of Shikhandi right before the battle, because now they're making the point that no one can defeat him and everything, but just as Dhrishtadyumna has been born to kill Drona, Shikhandi has also been born to kill Bhishma. So he's telling the story. So now she has been, kidnapped along with her sisters. She pointed out she wanted to marry Shalga. Then she was, said, okay, then she should go join with him. He wouldn't accept because of his pride and being defeated in battle. He came out catch, but then he was defeated. Rather than coming to an agreement there, it didn't work out. And so now she's not going to marry, who Bhishma had taken for his brother. And Shikhandi won't accept. She won't go back, so what to do? So the Rishis are then discussing this. Well, the Rishis consulted among themselves. Some thought Shalva should have accepted her, while others proposed that I should marry her, Bhishma. Eventually, they decided she should return to her father, for a woman must always be under the shelter of a husband, son, or father. Maybe because then relationships are fixed and strong, and then one can work very nicely. That's the nature of how things work. It's when you have that masculine-feminine principle, and it's connected, whether it's father-daughter, husband and wife, son and mother, like this, it doesn't matter, but there is this principle is there, then the strength is there. And then there's a relationship, a basic relationship. From there you can move out into anything. But if there's no basic relationship, how does it work? Just like a flag, if there's a flagpole, it can fly in any direction very nicely. But if there's no flagpole, it's not like the flagpole is seemingly doing much. The flag is going fluttering, it's the one that's attracted, not the flagpole. But because it's there, then these things go on. So that's the Vedic principle, is that then you can have very strong relationships. But Amba refused to go. She said she would never return to his father's city and suffer disgrace. Right? Because then she was kidnapped, then who she wanted to marry won't accept her, then who she was kidnapped to marry then doesn't want to accept because she actually loves someone else and is trying to help there, and so she gets stuck in between. While the Rishis thus sat pondering about what to do, the royal sage Hotra Vahana arrived at the hermitage. He took special pity on Amba because he happened to be her maternal grandfather. He became enraged that I had stolen her and thus ruined her life. With his lips trembling in anger, he said, "Oh, Amba, you have grieved enough. Do not go to your father's house, for that will only increase your grief. You should place your case before the great Parasuram. He is my good friend and well-wisher. For my sake, he will surely remove your grief. Either he will convince Bhishma to accept you, or he will slay him in battle. Only the sage is powerful enough to do either." It so happened that Parasuram was due to arrive at the hermitage the next day. He arrived early in the morning, clad in black deerskins, and surrounded by his disciples. Right? So the black deerskins are the ones that are worn by the Brahmins. They're called the black buck, it's like that. And so then in certain seasons, as they mature, then the skin gets, the hair goes black in the middle. It's still, the sides are still, the stomach is still white. And it has some stripes in it and like that. But then that they're mature when it goes black like that. The spiral horns, So they're antelope. That kind of deer, not the deer where they go out like that. The spotted deer, that's then what kshatriyas wear. Right? So that's how you tell who's who by what kind of deer skin they wear. An axe over his shoulder and a bow in his hand. He was a frightening sight. Long matted locks hung down to his shoulders, and his eyes blazed like fire. After he had been properly received and worshipped by the other sages, he sat down with Hotravahana and was told of Amba's plight. He called for her and said, "You are as dear to me as you are to Hotravahana," right? Because he's his maternal grandfather. Grandfather or great-grandfather? Grandfather. And so then, because they're good friends, then he was like a granddaughter to him also. "Tell me what I should do for you. If you like, I can order Bhishma to accept you. If he will not, then I will consume him and all his ministers in battle. Or if you prefer, I shall order Shalva. Tell me your decision, O princess." Amba replied, "It seems that Bhishma is the cause of my present calamity. I think you should slay him. I have become so vengeful that I now only wish to bring about his death. O great sage, kill that covetous and mean-spirited man for my sake." Parasaram was reluctant to take up arms against me and said, "I will only use my weapons if the Brahmins request it. This is my vow." Right? Because being a Brahmin, then that's the position. It's because he had, Kartavirya Arjuna had offended Brahmins, you know, means by killing his father and disturbing other Brahmins. Then he, you know, went out and fought. But otherwise, as a Brahmin, it's not technically his duty. But he said if the Brahmins ask, then he will do. Like you see, Narayana Rishi, they just do penance and austerity. But if the demigods require, then they can come there and then they'll fight. "I can, however, make either Bhishma or Shalva accept my order. Therefore, select one of them as your husband, fair maiden, and I will do the rest." Amba had already concluded that all she wanted for me was to die. She asked Parasaram again and again to challenge me to a fight. At that time, another rishi, Akritavana, feeling compassion for Amba, also requested him to fight. Because a Brahmin requested him, Parasaram finally said, "All right, I will go to Bhishma to seek a solution by peaceful means. If he will not accept my words, then I will certainly slay him." The following day, he made his way to Hastinapur with Amba. I worshipped him with all respect, and then he said with anger in his voice, "O Bhishma, in what consciousness did you kidnap Amba? Although you took her by force, you then sent her away. You have robbed her of her virtue, for no other man can now accept her. Therefore, you should accept her either for your brother or for yourself." I replied, "I cannot by any means take back this maiden, for she has given her heart to another. It is always wrong for a virtuous man to accept such a woman. I cannot renounce my duty out of fear, greed, attachment, or pity. This is my vow, O Rama." The sage blazed, "If you do not act according to my instructions, then I shall slay you and all your ministers." He said this repeatedly, and I tried in many ways to calm him with gentle words. Realizing that he was bent on fighting, I asked, "Why do you wish to fight with me, O best of your race? In my childhood, I was your pupil, and you taught me the martial military arts." Parasaram replied, "Although I am your preceptor, you have not obeyed my command. There is only a way to gratify me, either accept this maiden and perpetuate your race, or prepare yourself for death." Because technically one could say, as well, he is his guru, he has to do it. But when it comes to marriage, that's the only request from the guru you don't necessarily have to follow. It means if you're intelligent and you see that it's proper, you want to get married, you need to get married, and he's telling you to marry and there's a suitable candidate, then, of course, then you would get married. But if you find that you actually don't want to be a married person, so it's not a matter of liking this particular girl or not, it's a matter of you don't want to get married and you actually feel, you know, you have to be very confident in the point that you could maintain that vow. Otherwise, then why would you miss this opportunity if it's actually something it was required? That's the only one. Like we see, the example is given in the four Kumaras. Lord Brahma told them to get married and increase the population of the universe, and they said no. And to this day, they're still not married. So, like that. But Prabhupada makes a point, that's the only order that you may avoid. But it can't be you avoid it now out of pride. It has to be out of, you sincerely think that it's not the path you want to take. Okay. But my guru's words found no place in my heart. I replied, "O Lord, I cannot obey your command. What is the use of laboring for it? What foolish man would accept into his house a woman sighing for another? Furthermore, I have made a solemn vow never to marry. I see no virtue in your order. The god Vayu has stated that a preceptor may be abandoned if he is vain, has swerved from the right path, or does not show his proper duties. I see no sin in fighting with you on this occasion rather than accepting your order. You are asking me to engage in an unrighteous act only for your profit. Witness now the strength of my arms and my superhuman prowess. Let us go to Kurukshetra. Slain by my arrows, you will attain the glorious regions you have earned by asceticism, O you whose only wealth is devotion. By then, I was myself infuriated. I asked, I added, you boast that you have conquered the entire Kshatriya race, but today I'll prove that that boast false. When you defeated the Kshatriyas, I had not been born, nor anyone like me. You consume straw. He who will end your boasts and your desire for battle has now been born. I will destroy your pride. Do not doubt it. The sage smiled. It is fortunate, O Bhishma, that you wish to fight. I will thus curb your arrogance. We will fight at Kurukshetra. There, your mother Ganga will see you thrown down and turned into food for vultures. O ruler of the earth, your mother does not deserve to see such a sight, but it must be so, for you are foolish and overly proud. I bowed before the sage and said, be it so. After performing propitiatory rites to invoke the Brahmin's blessings, I mounted my chariot and headed out of the city. Equipped with all my weapons, I shielded my chariot with a white umbrella and yoked my white horses, which can move with the speed of the wind. As I moved off, bards and singers eulogized me. I arrived at Kurukshetra and saw Rama waiting there, clutching his huge bow. Thousands of his followers were present, and around the battlefield stood numerous rishis. In the sky, I saw the gods headed by Indra. Celestial music sounded, and flowers fell from the heavens. Right, this is a big thing. Parasaram, an incarnation of the Lord, and he has come to correct the Kshatriya race and everything. And then here, Bhishma, he was born of Ganga Devi. You know, is also very special. He is also celestial because he didn't study here on Earth. He went to the heavenly planets and studied there. And so then. It's going to be, this is, a fight of the millennia, like that. My own mother, assuming her divine human form, came before me and asked, what do you wish to do, my dear son? When I told her, she reproved me, you should not fight with a Brahmin. Do not fight Jamadagni's son. His strength is equal to that of Shiva. He exterminated the Kshatriya race. You know all this. Why then have you come to fight with him? I explained to my mother all that had happened and made it clear that I would not now turn back. She then implored the sage not to fight with me. I was, after all, his disciple, which is the same as a son. The sage said he was determined to teach me a lesson. Helpless to stop either side, my mother retired from the battlefield, feeling anxious for my sake. I looked across at Parasaram and saw that he had no chariot or coat of mail. I called out, how can I fight you while you stand upon the earth, O Rama? Mount a chariot and put on your armor, for I will now release my weapons. Rama laughed back. The earth is my chariot, the Vedas are my horses, and the wind is my driver. The mothers of the Vedas, Gayatri, Savitri, and Saraswati, are my armor. Well protected by all of them, I shall fight, O delighter of the Kurus. The sage immediately covered me on all sides with a thick shower of arrows. Repelling his shafts, I saw him mount a blazing chariot that resembled a city. Celestial horses were yoked to it, and it was protected and ornamented by gold armor and decorations. The chariot was wonderful to behold and had been created by his will. Clad in brilliant armor, he stood upon it looking like Yamaraj, surrounded by the personified astras. His disciple, Akritavana, who had requested him to fight, had become his charioteer. And he dexterously wheeled the chariot about as Rama now called out, come, come. I repelled another two showers of showers of arrows. When I dismounted my chariot, putting down my weapons, I went over to the sage and prostrated myself on the ground. Whether you are my equal in battle or my superior, I will fight with you, my lord, even though you are my preceptor. Bless me that I may attain victory. Rama smiled. O best of the Kurus, your behavior is proper, and I am pleased by it,
If you had not come to me in this way, I would have cursed you. I cannot bless you to gain victory, since I myself desire to vanquish you. Go and fight fairly and with patience, O Hugo." But he has the blessings now with his guru. He maybe didn't get the blessings to be victorious, but he at least got the, you know, that he's... "I returned to my chariot and blew my conch, signaling the start of the battle. Both of us hurled every kind of weapon at each other. Each desiring victory, we fought furiously. Laughing, I released broad-headed shafts that chopped his bow into fragments again and again. Other arrows passed clean through his body and came out dripping blood, entering the earth like hissing serpents. But by his spiritual power, the sage maintained his life and fought back with fearsome energy. Covered with blood, Rama stood in his chariot like a mountain pouring forth lava. He responded with well-sharpened arrows that struck me like thunderbolts. Pierced in my vital organs, I trembled and held onto my flagstaff for support. I summoned all my patience and regained my composure. Released 100 deadly shafts at Rama. Struck by arrows, Ram fell senseless to the floor of his chariot. I was immediately seized by remorse and cried out, 'What have I done? I have slain my own preceptor, a virtuous Brahmin.' I dropped my weapons and held my head in anguish. But Rama soon rose again, his charioteer having expertly removed the arrows and tended him. The sun set and we retired for the day, coming together in the evening as friends. The next day at sunrise, we faced each other again on the battlefield. Rama shot blazing arrows with serpent-like mouths. I cut them down with my own arrows, even as they sped through the air. The sage then resorted to celestial weapons, which I countered with my own. During the violent exchange of weapons, I was suddenly caught on the chest by a dart that rendered me unconscious. My charioteer quickly removed me from the battle, and all of Rama's followers, along with Amba, sent up a cheer. After some time, I regained consciousness and ordered my charioteer to take me back into battle. He urged on my horses, which seemed to dance as they bore us towards Rama. Soon as I saw him, I fired hundreds of straight-flying arrows that screamed through the air, but Rama cut every one of them into pieces with his own arrows, and they fell uselessly to the ground. Then I sent hundreds more shafts at Rama, even as he was countering my last assault. He was caught off guard and knocked unconscious. As he fell from his chariot, a loud cry of "Alas!" went up from his followers. Seeing him drop to the earth like the sun falling from the sky, the Kashi princess, along with his many disciples, ran over and comforted him. They sprinkled his face with cooled water and uttered benedictory hymns. Rama slowly rose and looked across at me, seated on my chariot. Enraged, he shouted, "Stay, Bhishma, you are already killed." Like this, so this is going to go on for a while, so we'll see. We'll continue. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.